You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Welcome on board, K-Nation. This is episode 86 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, recorded on this February 10th, 2022. Eddie Greer, the host of the Purple Project Podcast, where we talk about Kansas State Athletics, the K-State University, home of the Wildcats here in Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple, where your host lives. Before I bring Alex on, my co-host usually on the weekly editions, as usual, find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple, Google, Spotify, Audioboom, and a couple more podcasting outlets out there. The Purple Project Podcast here, nearing the countdown to 100 episodes on this K-State podcast, folks. Yes, I stumbled on, somebody tweeted out something about K-State podcast out there, and how to get my two cents in there as well. And folks, speaking of which, we're gonna be getting guests on here, hopefully starting in the near future as well. So we're excited about that. Jacob Pullen, if you're listening, Purple Project Podcast, make sure you download it and subscribe, download it, and maybe you can be a part of the Triple P Podcast. I know he said, he tweeted out earlier today that he wanted to be on somebody's K-State Podcast. So Jacob Pullen, you're listening out there, you better add this to the K-State list of podcasts out there. Now it's time to bring on my co-host, usually for the Triple P Podcast out there. He lives in San Diego, California, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening?
Not too much happening today for me, Eddie. I've been pretty plugged in, actually, with the NBA over the last week. It's been a very interesting interesting last week of trade deadline transactions, and I've been following that. It's actually been a lot of fun following that and watching some Olympics as well, obviously. And it's Super Bowl week, of course. I'd probably be a little more plugged in on Super Bowl week. My Chiefs didn't want an 18-point lead in the AFC Championship game. But neither here nor there on that one. But yeah, NBA trade line is just crazy. You know, today, this is not an NBA podcast, but, you know, Ben Simmons and James Harden trade happening that I didn't expect would actually happen. A lot of action there. My Blazers were very busy over the last 10 days, offloading a bunch of guys and trying to create cap space and trying to create some flexibility and some different things so they can really try to reload this summer around Dame. So they've been busy up there in Portland. And then around the league, you got teams like the Lakers who couldn't offload someone who they needed to offload, i.e. Russell Westbrook. that's not a good situation there, La La Land. But hey, you know, I'm not gonna complain about that. So it's been interesting to follow all that stuff. And then look, you know, Eddie, coming back out of the college ranks. We got a couple teams here who've in the men's women's team have split a pair. The last two. Looking at the men's team, they got a really nice win at TCU. I thought that was one of the best games of the season, to be honest with you. And then they followed it up, you know, with the game against Baylor that I thought they played really good basketball in the first half. They just came out of locker goal or just really Baylor really just jumped on them, and they just couldn't, could not make that deficit up. And then you flip to the women's side, and, you know, they get the win over Tech. at home over the weekend by 7. And then their road woes continue as they have their worst road loss of the season by 45 there to Baylor on the road. Fun fact about the women's team, it's actually not a fun fact, it's the opposite of a fun fact, it's a sad fact. A sad fact for the women's team, they've not won a road game in over a month now. So, they're struggling on the road, and they're not just losing on the road either, Eddie. Their last four losses on the road are by 45 points, 15 points, 18 points, 19. The closest game of their last four road games was a 15-point loss. So they are not just losing on the road. They are getting their bleeps beat on the road. So it is not pretty. It is not pretty right now for the women's team on the road. And we'll talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but I think that my kind of overarching thought on the women's team is they're regressing. I just feel like they're regressing at 2-3 in their last five games. And their two wins are single-digit wins over teams in the conference at home. So, and then they're just getting their doors blown off of them on the road. So, I think it's really – ever since they had a huge win against Oklahoma where they won by 30 and Oklahoma went for 61, since then they've struggled. They just struggled. Yep. They just buttered cake and jumped them in the Big 12 standings now.
Yep.
And that is their next game. Their next game is on the road.
On the road, yep.
That's an enormous game. That's a huge game, and we'll get into that, like I said, later. But they seem to be regressing. Right now, and they've got to find a way to right that ship, Eddie. I think it's important for them. And look, I think we can, with the men's team, they're not regressing, but they're continuing to kind of do the two steps forward, two steps back. We talked about this last week on the podcast, but they're not at the point where they can do that anymore in the season. Their path to the NCAA tournament is narrowed, and they've got to be four steps forward and two steps back. They can't be doing, a couple wins and a couple losses. And then a couple wins and a couple losses. I mean, they need to win some games. So, for them, losing to Baylor, nothing to hang their head about there. Once again, just gives them a little less wiggle room. It just makes their game at Iowa State this weekend just that much more important. The games down the road more important, or down the stretch here more important. So, some interesting situations for the K-State basketball teams as they kind of hit that home stretch.
Yeah, and I'll get back to that in just a second. There's going to be a lot of activity going on starting tomorrow when this podcast comes out tomorrow, later tomorrow evening. You got the track team splitting this weekend. Half the team's going to Ames and the other's going to be going to Arkansas for the Tyson Invitational, and then the other one is the Iowa State Classic for the track and field team. Both of them are going down tomorrow. The Iowa State Classics at 12 Central Time in Ames, and the Tyson Invitational will go down at 3:45 Central Time on the campus of Arkansas University. Then in between there, tomorrow, the tennis team is going to be taking on Memphis at home. So that's going to be a start of actually two over the weekend as they welcome in Memphis. And I did a daily on this earlier this week. And then, of course, Sunday they play again. And then, of course, Saturday, there we go. Saturday, Florida Atlantic comes to Manhattan on Saturday afternoon. And then Tyson Invitational for the track and field, the other half of the track and field team will continue on Saturday as well. They have the basketball games kind of fall up here. So I'm going to do that a little bit early. So a lot of activity going on. And yeah, you mentioned NBA before we get into men's K-State basketball here. Yeah, I just literally when I went for my lunch break, the news broke out on James Harden, Ben Simmons, and all the folks already saying that Philadelphia is in the driver's seat for NBA championship with James Harden and Joel Embiid. Those talks have already started. And I don't and I might already I'm not on that bandwagon.
Me neither.
One bit. James Harden's James Harden's a good drama queen when he does not get his way. Yes, and B, I haven't really paid attention to much NBA basketball as of late, but I have been paying attention to two things out there. So Joel Embiid has been playing well, but I just don't know about that combination in Philly, and everybody saying, oh yeah, you know, it's the 76ers, man, they're gonna win a NBA championship.
Here's the thing about those trades. And once again, I know we're not an NBA podcast, but yeah, we talk basketball a little bit. Look, first off, Brooklyn got better, in my opinion, with the move. You know, they get Paul Millsap to add another big body down low that they needed. And then they add, you know, Ben Simmons, plus they load up with like two first round picks and get some assets around it as well. But, you know, with what they got, like, Ben Simmons fits what they do better and what Kate wants to do on the court and what Kyrie wants to do on the court when he is on the court. Part-time player right now. But he's just a better fit. And here's the thing with James Harden that really kind of irks me a little bit. Not irks me. I shouldn't say that. But why I would be hesitant to really put all my chips into the James Harden, kind of all the chips in the middle for James Harden. He quit on Houston. He quit on Brooklyn. And he, in Houston, he didn't just quit on them. He also quit on Chris Paul, essentially, at one point there. And then they ended up bringing in Russell Westbrook. He has had multiple times in his career where he has just quit on his team, or on a player, or on some sort of situation. And for a player who's in their mid-30s, who seems to have regressed a little bit this year, and taking on that type of attitude, that type of prima donna, and yes, I will call him a prima donna, because I feel like he is a prima donna, Eddie. I'll be quite frank with you. He's a fantastic basketball player, but I don't know if that's what I would do. And I understand that Philadelphia felt like, oh, we have to do something because Ben Simmons is sitting there not playing. You know, we fined him $20 million or whatever they fined him, $2 million. No, it was $20 million. I think they fined him like 20. It's a ton. He's been fined a ton, millions of dollars. And you're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, like, we have to do something. Well, here's James Harden. He's available. Well, let's go for it. Let's go swing for the fences. Yeah. Yeah, I get it, and you probably had to do that, but, you know, Philadelphia, you should have never been in that situation for trying to call Ben Simmons bluff. I mean, you did it to yourself before the season began. You put yourself in that situation where you really weren't built as a title contender. So, I don't love the move for Philly, Eddie. I understand why they did it, but I don't love the move. I think they made Brooklyn better.
Yeah.
If they end up facing Brooklyn in the playoffs, I think Brooklyn beats them. So, I mean, they get end up kind of getting them there, and you know, we'll see what happens. But then losing, getting rid of first round picks, stuff like that for James Harden, who knows how long he'll even be invested in what you're doing there. it just feels like a risky gamble, and a gamble that could have been avoided if Daryl Morey there, you know, didn't kind of, you know, botch the Ben Simmons situation off the, you know, kind of from the front. But I'm with you, Eddie. I'm not buying them as a title contender. Joel Embiid's playing amazing basketball. Best player on the NBA right now. But I'm with you, Eddie. I don't think so. I don't see it. I see team, you know, give me the Bucks over them right now. The Nets. Give me the Nets over them right now. Hell, give me the Heat. Give me teams like the Heat over them right now. You know, I'm with you, Eddie. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm not going to drink that Kool-Aid. Sorry for the rant, but I'm thinking about it all day. And not all day. That's not true. I've not thought about it all day. That is incorrect. I've not thought about it all day. The thinking about it that I've done, what a miscalculation by Philly to put themselves in a situation where they're forced to make that trade. because they botched the Ben Simmons deal so
bad. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did, and they might botch this one too. We'll just have to see what happens on that end. K-State back to make the transition back to Manhattan.
Yeah, Kansas. Mentioning botching, this is a great transition.
Yeah, botching. Yeah, K-State men's team last night. part of the Baylor doubleheader. Of course, the women's were in Waco and got waxed. More on that later. But K-State men's team, Bruce Weber, were tied with Baylor, with Scott Drew's Baylor Bears at halftime, 34-34. And then Baylor threw the gauntlet on them last night. A 19-4 run in the start of the second half. And like Alex said, K-State came out very cold. And that cost them. That cost them the game there. And also, I recorded just now, a couple hours ago, and it's up right now, where you listen to the podcast, the recent daily that focuses on the K-State men's and women's basketball teams. A little small summary against the Baylor Bears, and we're going to get into it even more here. But yeah, you had Nigel Pack once again, scorching hot at Bramlage for the second straight home game, or actually, yeah, second straight home game, 30-plus, 31 points, 10 of 19 shooting, 4 of 9 from downtown. Mark Smith had 13 also in the first half. He and Nigel had 13 in the first half, and then Mark Smith kind of cooled off in the second half. He only scored 4 points in the second half of this game. And then the big one. I mentioned this in the primetime daily. I mentioned it right now. Marquise Noel, foul trouble and shut out in on the scoreboard. Shut out on the scoreboard and does not help. You don't get help from anybody else. Luke Skupke had 4 points. That was the most points out of just outside of Nigel Pack and Mark's points. Mike McGurl, you don't get much from him, 3. Davion Bradford in 17 minutes of action, only 1 point. Noel, shutout. Ish Mashud, you ain't getting much from him, shutout. Carlton Lingard, 10 minutes of action, only 2 points. Casey Ezeagu, you know what you're going to get from him. He only played 6 minutes last night, only 2 points. Mashud, 0 for 3 from the field. McGurl, 1 for 3. Noel, 0 for 6. Davion Bradford, 0 for 3. what's the right word I'm trying to look for here? That's just ugly basketball outside of your two guys. Really, that's how you really want your big three to play well. And Marquise Noel having no points really hurt. And foul trouble does not help. You lose by 15. I mean, when you're at home, if you're trying to get, we talked about this on the podcast last week, episode 85, Alex, about Baylor being the best chance that K-State has to get a win, right? So, yeah, if you're trying to get a win at home, you gotta have your role players. You hear this a lot in college basketball, or especially in the NBA, particularly the playoffs, when you're at home, your role players play better. And here in this instance here, you don't get much whatsoever. McGurl, who had a good game on the road against TCU, this is coming off of, I agree with you, Alex, TCU was the best performance for K-State men's game. They came out aggressive. They came out with a purpose there after losing that heartbreaker that they should have won a few weeks ago. So they came out with a purpose. They did what it needed to do to knock you. You come back home. You carry a little bit of momentum there. You're ready to play. 34-34, all right. At halftime, like, okay, guys, we got a shot. We got a shot this, man. And then the lay an egg, the beginning of the second half, don't get much. And then have Nigel Pack try to carry you back. It's just a good recipe for disaster. So 75-60, and I said it on the Primetime Daily. It's pretty much, you can put all they talk about the NCAA tournament in the garbage can. You put that up and put it in the basket and throw it away, because they're not gonna get in. So now, I mean, just overall last night, what are your particular thoughts about the Baylor game? You say we talked about this off air, you only watched the first half, and then you got the notification there after you were done whatever it is you were doing last night. So, yeah, 15 points there. Baylor, you lose that game at home after Nigel Pack, for the second straight home game, drops 3+ and don't take advantage of it.
Yeah, well, and I'll say this, that he kind of just set it up. First off, do they have a path to the NCAA tournament? Yes. Do I think that they will achieve it? No. I do not think they'll achieve it. I never thought that they would achieve it. You know that path is still there. As I mentioned, though, at the top of the podcast, K-State's just been way too up and down. They have not been consistent all year long. As I didn't think that they would be. I did not think they would be consistent in Big 12 play this year. Conference too good. I won't go down this rabbit hole because I went down it last week, but that's why the non-con games were so important. It's because you just knew that Big 12 play was just going to be tough. It would be tough to get any kind of footing and traction because you're playing good teams every twice a week. So, but looking at the schedule, Eddie, I mentioned last week that the Baylor game was really their best opportunity. I felt like they needed to steal one. They needed to steal. We kind of walked through their schedule last week and, talked about what does K-State need to do to give themselves a chance. Just give themselves a chance to get to tournament play. And I said, 5 wins might get them there. 6 would probably put them in a better position. So, we were walking through those games saying, you've got to beat TCU. You've got to win this game against TCU. They do. They come out, they play arguably their best game of the year against TCU. They played really well. I would compare it, to me, that game was right on, in regards to their performance, was right on par with what they did with Tech in Texas. I really felt like it was on par with those two games, which I felt going into the TCU game, I felt like those were their best two games of the year. I felt like the TCU game was right up there. K-State took advantage of, Mike Miles not being there. And they were aggressive. You mentioned they were aggressive, and they played with a sense of urgency that we had not seen from them really since the KU game, the first half of that KU game. So, that was encouraging. I shouldn't say we didn't see a sense of urgency. We saw it a little bit against Oklahoma State the game prior, but it was really ratcheted up in Fort Worth there against TCU. But that was one of the games they had to get, and they did get that game. And kudos to them. They played really good basketball there. But looking on the schedule, we said, look, you've got to beat West Virginia at home. You're going to have to win that game. You're going to have to beat Oklahoma at home. You're going to have to win that game. You probably State, try to sweep them, and you're going to have to probably beat Iowa State at home. And we were looking, and it really came down to, if you want a chance, you're probably going to have to knock off one of the big boys, one of the top 10 teams, Baylor, KU, Tech. Those are really the three that are left on the calendar, on the schedule. Well, I don't think they're going to go to Allen Fieldhouse and get a win. I don't think that they're going to go to Lubbock and get a win. So I really love Baylor as the one game that they would have a chance to get. And you figured, maybe that could be an opportunity for them, and they squandered it away. So, as I said, at the beginning of the podcast, that really narrows your path of what you can do, and that really puts the Iowa State game on the road, which I don't think that they'll win. I think it'll be a close game, but I don't think they'll win it. I think it makes it pretty much a must-win for them because they don't win that game.
Well,
they would have to win. I know you said throw in the garbage can. Yes, Eddie, I don't think anything's going to happen. Just clearing that out. But if they did lose to Iowa State, hypothetically, they would have to realistically, 4-2 over their final 6 to get to 5, and then you'd have to go to Kansas City and get at least one game, if not 2. Just once again, narrow path. Path's there. Narrow path. They have not showed us all year that they have the consistency to do that. They have not showed us at any point that they have the consistency to win 4 of 6 in Big 12 play because they haven't won more than 2 games all year in Big 12 play. So, So, you know, and you got Bruce Weber over there in press conferences talking about, you know, I don't know, was it Chinese trees or Japanese trees? They don't grow for 5 years. And once they start growing, they don't stop growing. And K-State's going to be like the Chinese tree or something. I don't know. I don't know what he said. It's something along those lines. But anyway, yeah, I have to pull the tweet up, Eddie. I have to pull the tweet from Kellis up on this because I have to read this verbatim. I couldn't believe Bruce said this, to be 100% honest, in his press conference. But he said, if I can get it, here it is. Bruce Weber ends his news conference by saying he hopes the K-State basketball team can resemble a Chinese bamboo tree the rest of the season. Oh, why? Wow. It takes a long time for them to grow. Some stay dormant for 5 years, but once they start growing, they don't stop. So, yeah, that's where we are with the men's basketball team. But anyway, back to Baylor. So, look, K-State came out. They came out and played well. You're right, Eddie. I watched first half. I didn't catch the second half. Had some other obligations last night, but did catch the first half of the game. And look, they like I said, they got up to a good start. They were bleeding pretty much. It wasn't wire to wire in the first half, but it was pretty close.
They were leading by eight.
Yeah, they were leading pretty much the entire way. And they were playing well. You know, they were really active. They were really getting downhill. I thought they were playing aggressive against Baylor. I thought they carried what they did against TCU kind of into the Baylor game. They were really, we're going to be aggressive. You know, we're really going to play downhill on offense. We're really going to get to the hoop. That's good. That's exactly what K-State needs to be doing. I think it plays some of their strengths if they kind of play a little bit quicker offensively and kind of play downhill, get closer to the basket, get some looks that way. I think I kind of think that's what you have to do when you kind of look at K-State, their lack of production and the front court, which has been incredibly disappointing this season.
The stats I just went over.
Yeah, you know, it's incredibly disappointing what they've done, but look, what K-State was doing, as well as they were playing in the first half, I knew Baylor was going to adjust. But defensively, they're too good of a basketball team not to, because K-State wasn't necessarily moving the ball great. I didn't feel like in the first half, they just were doing a good job of kind of finding some holes in that Baylor D. Like I said, get that hill, get close to the hoop, and taking, you know, getting some shots down there. And they did a nice job rebounding the ball. Just get, you know, tip of the cap to them for keeping some possessions alive. The guards. It wasn't even the bigs that was doing it. It was the guards. So, you know, tip of the cap to them for that. But yeah, I still sat there and thought, is that sustainable for 40 minutes against Baylor? I don't think so. I don't think it is, and it wasn't. Shocker. Look, the biggest problem here, Eddie, as you mentioned it, you know, Nigel Pack, God, what can you say of his play? He's just been amazing. He has hit a three in, what did they say in the game? 26 straight games or something like that? Mm. Or maybe well, 16. Mm. It was an insane stat, how many games have always hit a three. But Nigel was amazing. Mark Smith showed up. You're right, he only had like four points in the second half, but he still had 17 in the game. Here's the problem. Castle had a 31 from Nigel, 17 from Mark. Your next leading scorer was Luke Zuki with 4. And Nigel and Mark Smith made up 48 of your 60 points. That's not going to do it against Baylor. And that is not going to do it against Baylor when all but two players score 12 total points. that is not good, Eddie. That is not good. I don't know if you knew that or not, but that's not good basketball. That's not going to win basketball games against top 10 teams. You mentioned it, Eddie. That is exactly right. Role players to have big games if you're going to be a team like Baylor, which is why you looked at that game and thought, well, that's probably their best shot. You're at home. You got a better chance of a role player popping out of the game. And that's literally what they did not have. No role player had a big game. You know, Nigel went off. Mark Smith had one of those games, you know, where he where he gets going. And it wasn't even like Mark Smith had one of those games. He had a hot streak. He had one real big hot streak in the first half where he just kind of got a bunch of buckets. And outside of that, he actually didn't do a ton. But he did still get 17 there. But look, if you're not going to get any production, and I think this is really what it comes down to for me, if you're not going to get any production in your front court against Baylor, forget it. You're not going to beat Baylor. You're not going to beat Baylor if you can't get any production in your front court. They're too big. They're too physical. And it's just not going to happen. And K-State got no production from their front court. Shocker, you know? Avion Bradford with 1 point. Good grief. You know, Carl Lengard with two. They were off 2 free throws, by the way. And then Easy Agu was the only big man who got a field goal, who actually scored a bucket that did not include a free throw. So, that is not going to do it. Not against the Baylor bigs. I felt like one of K-State's bigs had to go for double figures in this game for them to have a shot. Whether it was Bradford, Lingard, Easy Agu, didn't matter, but one of them needed to go for double figures. And let's be honest, Eddie. K-State's not beating Baylor with Marquise Noel scoring no points.
Nope.
And in foul trouble. I mean, that was never going to happen. That was never realistic. K-State, there was no way they were going to find enough offense to beat Baylor and without Noel. They were, once again, that was another thing that didn't seem sustainable, Eddie. They did it in the first half, but in the second half, I felt like, you know, Noel's going to have to come in. He's going to have to get going because – You can't just ride Nigel the whole game. I mean, you can't do it, you know. And they just didn't, like I said, you know, it was Nigel, it was Mark Smith, but there was just nothing else. That's not a recipe for success against Baylor. And it all started when they inbounded in the second half. You know, Baylor just jumped on them. Jumped on them, they got a big lead, got up double figures, just at the singer. So all that work you did in the first half, just gone. And also you're down double figures already to Baylor. Credit K-State, they kept fighting, they kept chipping away, trying to see what they could do. I think they cut it to within 6 there, with about 8 left. But it just it wasn't going to be sustainable. They were going to have to get some things going in the second half, and they just didn't get it, so... So here we are, you know, it's now at 12-11, 4-7 in Big 12 play, and, they're going in to play an Iowa State team that's really sputtering. You know, they're 3-8, believe it or not, in Big 12 play. I'm going to once again take this opportunity to mention what I said about Iowa State when we entered Big 12 play. They were ranked in the top 10. I said, I'm not sure if I'm in that top 10 ranking. They've beaten some good teams. I don't know. Well, they're 3-8. They're 3-8 Big 12 play. They're good. Don't get me wrong, Eddie. They're good. They're not a bad team. I do think that Iowa State's got a good team. I think they're better than the 3-8 Big 12 record. But they did get a little too much love, I think, coming into Big 12 play. But regardless, Ames is gonna be rocking. Ames is always rocking. It's gonna be tough. Casey's gonna have to go in there, try to find a win, and it's gonna be hard. If they can go into Ames, Eddie, and get a win, that I think that would probably, in my mind, go down as their that's probably their best one of the season. I don't know, man. Those Tech and Texas ones are looking really good right now. They're looking really good.
Even TCU looks still good right now.
And TCU looks good the way they're playing. Don't forget, TCU was 15-4 overall when K-State went into that game. But, man, going into Ames and getting a win under the current circumstances that K-State's under, that would be a big deal. Because if you look at K-State's schedule, their following two games after Iowa State are West Virginia and Oklahoma State. They got West Virginia at home, and then they go to Oklahoma. Those are two winnable games. So just given the context of a team that needs wins, a team that has not won more than two games, has not had more than two game winning streak in Big 12 play this year, if you can get a win at Ames under the circumstances of blowing that game against Baylor, you're setting yourself up to potentially go on a three-game win streak if you can beat West Virginia at home and then find a way to snag one at Oklahoma State. Huge yes. I don't think it will happen. I want to preface that again. I don't think this will happen. They are not consistent enough in my mind to do this. But that would be why I would think possibly that Iowa State game as the as really the biggest, possibly the biggest win for them on the year. But golly, looking at Tech and the way they play, that win is looking great because Texas Tech looks the part. They look like a team, in my mind, Eddie, that could be a Final Four caliber team. I mean, Texas Tech really is playing at that level. They're playing at that type of level. KU's playing at that type of level. And you know, even Texas is looking a lot better. They have been playing some really good basketball. Carr is just a beast down there. Gosh, the Big 12's loaded. But yeah. So either way. The most important thing for K-State is to got to find a way to put it behind you and not look in that rearview mirror. You know, if K-State, they've got to focus on Iowa State, because as much as I agree with you, Eddie, that NCAA tournament hopes, they're in the garbage can. I agree. I think they're in the garbage can. They're still realistic. They're still within reach, though. And as long as they're within reach, they need the team needs to be going and trying to you know, aspire to meet those goals. And if I've learned one thing about Bruce Weber, Eddie, is he may not overachieve all the time, but he sure seems to find a way to answer when his back is against the wall, just to keep the heat off, just enough. Seems like it never fails. Every time this year when the heat's gotten turned up on and everyone's like, that's it, we're done, get him out of here, then all of a sudden he beats a Tech, or he goes beats a TCU on the road, or he goes on the road and beats Texas, or he goes and beats Wichita State in Wichita. You know, he's pulled that rabbit out of the hat, and I don't know, I feel like we could potentially see that see that a couple more times down the road here. Look, the reason I think that we're even discussing this too is, I mean, they had it was in the TCU game. Joe Lenardi briefly he didn't join the broadcast, but they asked him about it during the broadcast. And Joe Lenardi said for K-State to get back to the bubble, if they beat TCU, they need to go 4-4. That was what he said. And if you look at the net ranking, they fall. I know people hate to hear it. They fall within that 68. They fall within the 68. They're 63 right now. So as much as I'm with you, Eddie, that no, they don't have a shot in hell tournament, I agree. I don't think they do either. It's still there. It's still within reach. And as long as it's within reach –